Welcome to Nourishing the Mother, an inspired conversation space between Bridget Wood and Julie Tenner on the journey of motherhood through the common thread of parenting, relationship, and sexuality as a path to consciousness.
We keep our conversations honest, our experiences real, and our philosophies exploratory. We believe that in order to raise incredible humans, we first have to raise ourselves. We know that in order to rock the family, you've got to nourish the mother. If you are here, you care about paving a path of conscious and intentional motherhood, connected with yourself and your gifts, and also illuminating your children in theirs so we may raise more whole humans who can impact this world in a more humane way.
If you desire to integrate your learnings practically and supportively, head on over to bridgetwood.life or julietenner.love to go deeper. And for all live-streamed, pre-release podcasts and all our free content, head over to our free Facebook group, Nourishing the Mother with Bridget Wood and Julie Tenner. We are Julie Tenner and Bridget Wood, and we are so grateful you're here.
This episode contains world words.
Hello and welcome to Nourishing the Mother. I'm Bridget Wood.
And I'm Julie Tenner. And today's podcast is building the capacity to mother in the way you were not mothered. Mm-hmm. And this is part one. This is us going on this journey through the channeling, insights, downloads, lens, pathways in that Bridget's consciousness brought forwards.
I love the way you said that.
Well, because actually, for those of you that are interested in our process, is that often what we do when we have a topic that we know we want to dive into and it's meaty and we're trying to decide what we want to bring forwards to you, when it's less discussion-y and it's more like we want you to get something out of it, we often go, right, 2 minutes thinking time, quiet time, off in our own world time, jotting brain stuff down. And then we come back together and go, what are we pulling together out of both of our consciousness lenses? Sometimes we have same stuff, often we have different stuff, and we decide what we're going to do in the podcast. This time, when we distilled that, there were six amazing points, and six is too much for a podcast. So we've decided to split them into three conscious points that Bridget's consciousness brought forwards, and then part two will be three conscious points that my consciousness is brought forwards, but under the same banner.
Yes. So it is a big topic, because I think that if you go on any kind of conscious parenting path, it's because you're fueled by something that you feel was missing for you. So you're only looking for parenting skills or learning how to up your mothering capacity if you feel like your own experience of being mothered missed the mark in some way. Or wasn't met. Mm-hmm. So that is where we come to when we have this conversation. And I'm going to let you kick me off, Jules, with the points, and I'm going to talk through each of those.
Let's go. I'm excited. Point number one is know what's unrealistic.
Yes. So there's this most beautiful poem that I had, and I think you might remember this, Jules. I had it next to my daughter's bed, my middle daughter's bed, when she was this fiery baby and toddler. And it was called The Great Mother. And it was beautiful, all about, you know, being this beautiful anchor for this child's emotions to crash against. And it was essentially just being the ocean for all of you, so that all of you was okay and all of you was held. And it gave me such strength, I think, in some of my darkest moments of rage as a mother, I think, in those early years with Sylvie. And also, the longer you parent, and particularly the longer you parent seeking to bring a level of consciousness to your own behaviors and the way you want to relate to your child, the more you realize that this way of gentle or constantly conscious and centering your child kind of parenting, the more you realize that that's actually outside the realm of a normal human's capacity to be. And so this is, I think, what mothering our own children is supposed to teach us when we have really unrealistic expectations on ourselves, or also projecting back to our own childhood on our own mother, right? Because we can take snapshots of our experience of being a child where we felt hurt or scared or unseen or unloved by our own mother, and they can color our view of her, and they can shape our expectations of ourselves. And often it's when we will most judge ourselves and have the most shame about our behavior when we cannot meet that pinnacle version of mothering that we hold up for ourselves that really comes from that hurt child inside of us. Mm. And so we feel such deep shame if we perceive ourselves to perpetuate what was done to us.
Yeah.
So I want to kind of frame this point with that, because in moments of stress, of which there are many as a mother, your nervous system will regress you back. Like in moments of stress, we essentially regress to earlier parts of our emotional development. So this is why the triggers in motherhood are so real and so visceral, because they're showing us where new areas for development are for us. Mm. And so what was my point that I was talking to? Your expectations, was it?
Well, the deep shame that we feel when we perceive that we're perpetuating what was done to us.
Yeah. So knowing that, I think, is really important to recognize, because there actually is no perfect that you're ever going to meet. But what you can meet is a beautiful collection of moments of deep attunement with your child that become actually also deep attunement with yourself. Mm-hmm. And these are the things that I think we want to gather in our mothering journey. And they come from centering the value and deeply believing that there's value in putting your time and energy here, which I think you're doing if you're listening to this podcast, right? Because it requires an enormous amount of nervous system rewiring to walk yourself through those triggers, to, you know, like I was having to with my daughter and those rage responses that were within me. Mm-hmm. I knew that that poem was an anchor for me, because it could hold me when I was getting really wobbly. But there are many ways in which we can provide those things to ourselves, but one of the ways also needs to be checking our expectations on what we're asking of ourselves.
I just think what's worth honing on here, which ultimately is what birthed Nourishing the Mother, is this point that you and I both arrived at in our own unique ways, is that the constantly conscious centering of your child paradigm.
Yes.
That arguably, if you're listening to this podcast, you fit under. Yes. Or are prescribing to. subscribing to. Sits outside of the realm of what is possible for a single human.
Mm. Yes.
And I think we want to hold that. Like, this is why I love the and conversation, because I think so much of the human experience where you create freedom is when you stop following any type of dogma and one-sidedness, and you start being able to hold difference and polarity.
Mm.
And so what we want to be able to do is hold the complexity of being a human, the complexity of being a mother. It's not a straightforward narrative. Because I like tomatoes and I don't like tomato sauce, both of those things can exist without explanation.
Is that true?
No, but I'm just, you
know. I actually had a vested interest in that moment to know if that was true.
Thanks for the comic relief.
Well, no, I'm only speaking for the listeners who may also want to know that little bit of.
No, do you know why? Because I came up with that back at my husband's 50th, back in the midst of COVID, when there were many, you know, family turmoils that were created based on those dynamics. Do you remember this?
I do.
I ended up in a very heated argument with my brother-in-law.
Yes.
And essentially, after digesting what the fuck had just happened, because we actually both quite like each other, what I realized was this, and I still pull on that moment when I'm understanding the and conversation and when I'm meeting just humans in their humanity. Mm. So I think it was such a beautiful moment because I still use it today. So that's where that came from, is in my reflections, I realized we weren't arguing the setup of Melbourne's culture at that point in time and governing and all of the things, which I'm not bringing into this podcast. Mm. We were essentially arguing two different philosophical viewpoints.
Yes. Yes.
His was, you can't pick and choose your rules. When you say yes to driving, you're saying yes to wearing the seatbelt and following the rules and driving on the right side of the road. Extrapolate that out into COVID. Mm-hmm. And I was arguing, because I like some rules doesn't mean I say yes to all rules. And yes, I can hold both.
Those two very difficult, different,
very different ideas. Yes. So hence, the complexity of being human. I can like tomatoes and not like tomato sauce, and that doesn't have to make sense.
Yeah. Thank you.
So that's where that came from. So when you hear me saying that, I'm actually just anchoring into that moment at my husband's 50th and pulling it forwards.
Love those moments of tension for all those teachables.
Right. COVID was many. Sorry, let me bring us back on track in terms of this podcast. My point is, what I like about what you said, and I think what we want to bring into here in your point, is the idea that, you know, the Bridget who's sitting there anchoring herself, finding the ways in which she can anchor into her environment and pull more from herself than what her childhood wounds would naturally allow, mm, in order to center and meet her child in a way she was never met. Mm. Yes, and it's impossible for anyone human to do that 24/7.
Yes, exactly. As evidenced by the time when you came in for us to record a podcast around that time, and I was in the fetal position crying on my bed, and I told my husband because I couldn't do it anymore. I think he lovingly came and stroked my back or something. You gave me the mothering I needed to mother, right? So, yeah, you know, you're not designed to do it all. Your nervous system actually can't handle it if you try to do it all.
Yeah.
And I do actually hope that there's a mother listening here who bursts into tears right now hearing that.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Because you're actually not supposed to, and it's not all on you. And if it means that right now you're hearing this, or you go home and your child is pulling at your leg and you just can't do it anymore and you just sit in a heap with them and cry on the floor, that's actually really okay.
Yeah.
Because it's you taking care of what needs to be taken care of in you.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. So what I hear you saying is one of the points that I'd written down from your original conversation, which is don't lose yourself in every want of your child.
Mm, yes. Because it can be easy. Children are so egocentric that, of course, they're going to have 101 wants in a day. And if we're parenting from that place of, you know, I must be better, I must do better, I must be this pinnacle of perfect mothering, then you're going to think that, that I mustn't harm this child and I must give them what they need or they want. And you can end up feeling really, really controlled by your child. This is when the tiny dictator thing comes in, right? You're feeling controlled by a tiny person. That's not their role. And if it feels like that's what's happening, and, you know, and this has happened to me like lately with my middle child, I have found myself saying, I found myself saying to myself being a trigger, I'm like, I am being emotionally manipulated.
Which we all of the time.
Right? I could feel it happening. And I was like, I won't stand for this. Because, I mean, part of, like, that part of, like, you know, we it's not the part that we see written up in all the perfect Instagram kind of reels or whatever. But part of conscious parenting is knowing when we're being pulled into our own narrative. Like, part of it is noticing when we're participating in a dynamic where we're really trying to just heal our inner child.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally, totally. And under this guise of what you're talking about here and knowing what's unrealistic and not losing yourself and your child's every need is to also understand the developmental lens, to balance the expectations on yourself and possibly also your mother, right?
Yes, because one of the benefits we do, it's both a benefit, it's a double-edged sword. What we know now, we never knew in the 80s around neuroscience and developmental pathways, and, you know, a child's capacity to share it too is almost non-existent, and yet we tell our child that's not nice when they don't share, right? Like, we have these unrealistic expectations which we can end up beating ourselves up with because we are participating in a social culture where other people's perception of us matters more than our connection to ourselves. And so that awareness of, you know, where what is developmentally realistic versus what actually is just a social idealism that I'm trying to project upon my child or upon myself, and knowing where you stand in that, and actually continually looking at, right, as your child grows, to figure out what's my boundary here? You know, or what's my investment here? Am I going to spend all this time trying to control an impulse in my child that actually, if I gave them the time developmentally to adapt, I would save myself all of this time instead of trying to force it? Can be the thing that liberates you, but it will also require for you to liberate yourself in that. It'll require you to liberate yourself from how you judge yourself or perceive other people judging you when you don't conform to dominant ideals, right?
Yeah.
Are you willing to be the mother of the naughty child, right?
Yeah.
So it how your liberation is tied up in how much you are willing to open the door of the cage you're in.
Yeah. This podcast is brought to you by what we have going on in the world. And at julietenner.love, it's Honey Club. Think about Honey Club as your 12-month relationship boot camp, kind of like a science experiment. You'll learn about and try out some skills that will change your relationship from disconnected and frustrated to connected and passionate, where you'll come to realize and embody that you feeling great and loving your own desires makes you the type of partner he can't wait to come home to. So come join Honey Club and get your irresistible game on. Find out more at julietenner.love. And Bridget, what have you got going on?
If you would love to overcome overwhelm and feeling not enough in motherhood so you can experience more joy and connection, then book an Alchemy one-to-one package. It's an intensive 6 weeks with me to transform your mothering experience. Find out more at bridgetwood.life.
Point number two is heal your own nervous system.
Yeah, this is a really big one. And this is actually something I think when I entered motherhood, I was completely unaware of. I don't think I had very much knowledge at all of the nervous system. And it became a crash course in recognizing that I was the set point for everything, you know, in terms of what was coming up in my family, what was feeling like it was trapping me, what was feeling like it was too much, was so much as a result of what my nervous system was making mean about certain things, you know, that I was feeling. And then how much I could hold it, and therefore when I would get to the point of not being able to hold it, how I would then try to escape it.
Yeah.
Not recognizing that this is something that I can work with and attune to, yeah, and give space to, and that actually the anxiety that I was so gripped in, I could choose to shift out of when I prioritized how I was being in my body and what I was giving my body as a way to process things, as a way to recognize how hooked I was on a particular pattern of relating to my child or believing about myself, you know, even becoming so fixated on, you know, certain parenting approaches, right? We both did this, like the co-sleeping or the wearing your baby or the like responding to their every single need, and how much that was tied up in the discomfort in my own nervous system, which I had discounted, but instead attached myself ideologically to like the best thing for my child, not recognizing this best thing for my child actually conveniently means I don't have to address what's happening in my nervous system. That makes sense. Like this best thing for my child, like me feeding them to sleep or me never leaving their side, means I don't have to confront my own abandonment wounding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was my abandonment wounding that was wrapped up in my resistance to separation from them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I feel that so deeply when you say that. I think that was one of the biggest healing points for me between babies one and two and babies three and four, babies one and two, you know, was that.
Yes.
I slept Velcro, couldn't leave them. It was abusive too in any way.
Yeah.
And, you know, going on the big pendulum swing of that and the shadow side of that and reconciling the cost of that as well, because there is a cost to that. Like whenever we're choosing something, we're also saying no to something else. By the time I came to having babies three and four, I was like, I cannot do that anymore. My life is so much busier. And I want to do all these other things, which means actually this way of living is not sustainable for me anymore. Mm-hmm. If I, and I love who I am and I don't want to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to work out how this shifts. And that singular point that you just made was the singular difference between my children sleeping horrendously and waking up every 40 minutes and sleeping profoundly well in their own cots, in their own rooms.
Yeah, a big shift, isn't it?
I would not call that abusive. In hindsight, I would call the lack of sleep and deep sleep that, you know, essentially they weren't getting, I would call that more abusive.
Yeah.
My children having deep quality sleep that nourishes their nervous system and allows them to grow and allows them to be more emotionally regulated in the times they're awake, which makes it easier actually for me to love them and be present. Yeah, that feels more wholesome. Me feeling more well-rounded, more wholesome. But it was singularly that point. It wasn't actually what I was doing or not doing to my child. It was about how could I hold this in myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is what you're saying.
And that was my experience with probably my third most of all, I think, was just, you know, me knowing and feeling that even as she's in this pram and I'm like rocking her to sleep in this pram and she's really upset, that I can connect to me and I can energetically connect to her and we're both okay here.
Yeah.
That was such a healing experience that I didn't give myself permission to do any earlier than that. But, you know, I see this with women who struggle to wean, even though they hate it, even though they're beyond being able to breastfeed anymore. But it can be an attachment wound.
Yeah, totally. Oh, gosh, I've lost where we're up to. Part of that was also paying attention to what's happening in your body rather than overriding your body's signals or boundaries.
Yeah. Yeah. So just noticing when you feel like you're about to close or when you notice you're feeling a little bit unsafe. And is that truth or is that old, right? Is that old, like we're talking about here, some of that really early separation stuff that's stored and coming up in this moment. You know, even we can look at relationship stuff and how, you know, when we over-support our children, our partner is designed to come in and be the challenger of them. And if we continually come into that dynamic with the lens of woundedness, then we will see our partner as a perpetrator and not actually see them as somebody here to balance a dynamic where we have become very skewed. Mm. I really look at, you know, how am I seeing everything in this whole situation that's making me feel a little trapped, and what actually if I could see things more widely, mm. and how could that actually be liberating as a force? Because, you know, as you said, Jules, like that point of liberation for you with the sleep thing changed everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's little opportunities and little breadcrumbs for this in our parenting at various ages and stages, mm-hmm. you know, where we're holding on and our child is pulling away, or where we're holding on and someone else is coming in and challenging our holding on. And is it, and we have these conversations in Reimagining Motherhood, like how much is it you and your values and honoring your values, and how much is that person outside of you coming in as a challenger to help you see wider, to help you expand your lens?
Yeah. And also just the whole idea that we really need to be able to be in connection with ourselves in order to parent consciously.
Yeah. Otherwise it's just a heady kind of download from something you've read that you're trying to do or fumble through that's not embodied.
Yeah, which arguably is still abandonment, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like you're actually doing the very thing you're avoiding doing. I think some of the most conscious parenting, I think, is also like when you really listen to your body and listen to what your child wants and you realize, no.
Yeah.
And like how beautifully authentic that can be for you.
Yes.
Even in the face of that child's disappointment, and how actually that's also in service to your child. Yes. Like how is you being really authentic in this moment?
Yeah.
Even if it's not what they want, perfect for them too.
Yeah. Yeah. And never getting to that point where you feel like you've got that, you know, little sergeant running your life, or no one cares about you or sees you or values you. Or, you know, I was saying to my sister, I saw her the other day because it's Mother's Day coming up soon, and we were organizing to catch up, actually, her and I. And she's like, do you want to catch up? Or you got other stuff to do? Have you got to see everyone? And I was like, you know what? Mother's Day used to be a huge thing. Like we even moved seeing our mums off of Mother's Day because Mother's Day needed to be mine.
Mm.
And I said to her, you know, what's so interesting to me is I used to care way more about Mother's Day. Like I needed to I was so over functioning that I needed to claw back this day that was this one vital day where I could do what I wanted to do selfishly. And it was about me. And the best thing they could have done is sent me off and away from my kids for a whole day.
Yes. Yeah.
Versus now where there's not such a polarity swing. I don't need to claw back because it exists in my everyday.
Mm.
Them and me, them and me, them and me. Not just them, ignoring that I exist and then getting fucked off at everyone and resentful and all the stories and needing to claw back now. You know, one day isn't even enough. That's how gagging I am for me.
Yeah.
And I said to her, I don't even care about Mother's Day anymore. Like, whatever, it's great, cool, let's just do some shit.
That's interesting.
That's right.
Mm.
And that's essentially what we're saying here, right, is being able to have this touch point on you and not feel like it's your life is run by other people.
Yeah.
And the last point is the pendulum swing, never wanting to be like her.
So this is one that I think Julie's probably spoken more about on the podcast, but one I certainly see in a lot of clients is this sense of, and maybe it was a sense since childhood, or maybe it's something that's woken up in you since you've become a mother, is this really strong part of you that on one hand can sort of see your mother's perspective, but on the other hand has a really deep sense of, I never want to be anything like her.
Mm-hmm.
And it can fuel you for a while, as Julie has talked about. But at some point you're going to run crashing into those parts in her you most judge. You're going to become that. So there's a universal principle that says whatever we judge, we breed, attract, or become. So we attract into our world the things that we disown or discard or make wrong, or we become them. Mm-hmm. Or we birth them, or our children become them. Mm-hmm. So the most loving thing we can actually do for our children is to love our mothers.
Mm.
And that's some of the deepest work that I see mothers having to do for themselves. But ultimately, that is where your liberation is. It's not in being the complete opposite of her. It is not in cultivating this pinnacle of perfect mothering in you. It is looking at your own mother and your own childhood and unpacking the wisdom in it and the love in it for you, because that is actually where you're going to give your own children more of a whole experience of being mothers. And that's what they need. They don't actually need your perfect attunement and gentleness and selflessness all of the time. And if you think that that's what they need all of the time, that's actually a disservice to them. It keeps them small. They need a mother who also leads herself beyond mothering, and leads herself in the world, and leads herself in her loves, and leads herself in her dreams. And sometimes her dreams are going to be at odds with what her child wants.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they don't consciously say it, what they actually want to see is you go for them.
Mm. Well, it gives them permission to do the same, doesn't it? Like we're building a pathway that they get to follow, or that's they have to create on their own.
Mm.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm writing down. Yeah. Being the opposite to her. I also go, fuck, trying to love my mother. Like, if you're like me, I'm like, oh, I might be trying to do that for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And I really get that heaviness of it too. And I mean, I think it's a journey, right? As you've said, like, there's been parts that you've learned to appreciate more of. Or
and
like,
that's exactly what I was about to say. Yeah. Exactly what you're leading us down. Yeah.
Well, love is not, I'm not saying love like, oh gosh, I just love it. It's like love like I can see both sides.
Yeah. Love like I can appreciate without having to choose.
Yes. Love as the synthesis of like support and challenge. So I can see how like what she gave me was not this perfect, supportive, great mother energy that we all crave, right? But what she gave me was this border of support and challenge that I can find appreciation in.
Yeah. 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 And I think that's the case too. Like my sister and I still talk about, my sister was like, oh my God, it's so funny when you said, you know, when we're stressed, I think it was in last week's podcast, when we're stressed, we regress. Mm-hmm. And that's the times we're going to meet our mother.
Yeah.
Right. And my sister was like, oh God, when I got over, she's like, oh, do these things. Then I'm like, oh God, I'm grandma right now. it just takes me a minute to just get my own nervous system back on track. And just said, then I go back to my kids and own it.
Mm.
I'm really sorry. I just did this, said that, whatever, and that wasn't okay.
Mm.
I'm going to do these things differently. And I think that is just as healing.
Absolutely. I mean, even that is a step forward that I don't think that our generation got.
No, I don't think so either.
I don't really ever remember. I mean, maybe once, but I definitely don't remember as a young child my parents ever repairing.
Yeah, or owning their own shit.
Or owning their stuff, right?
Like, and the impact on you. When did that ever happen?
Parents as God.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't, yeah, I just think that in and of itself is something that's incredibly beautiful, to learn that you can hold relationship and challenge, that to hold really deep and authentic relationship looks like ruptures and repairs.
Mm.
And that you're not abandoned, kicked out, and therefore fawning when something ruptures. Mm. And I think that's an incredibly beautiful skill for us to be able to hold and witness and hand on to our children. I mean, so useful to them in relationship.
Mm.
And on the pendulum swing, and, you know, I attract my mother into my life all the time. The more I keep her at arm's length, or, you know, as distant from me as possible, the more I just attract versions of her into my life.
Someone else plays those same cards to you.
Yeah. And I'm like, God, she's my mother. I can't. But because I have this awareness, when I see that trait and I watch myself have the same reaction because it feels the same in my body, I know enough to check myself and go, what is happening here? What is this trait? What is this that I'm recoiling or rebelling against? Oh, shit, it's my mum. Okay, where is my mum in my life right now? And if she's really far away, in air quotes, from me, then of course this person's going to be right in my face. So I can pick.
Yeah.
Do I want to learn, deal, and love the traits in people that I have less history with because that's the teacher? Or do I want to push them further away by virtue of pulling my mum closer? I find that too hard for my nervous system to do. So I keep her at arm's length with all my boundaries. Where at that, in that way, I'm able to love her as she is without her having to be anything different. And I think that that is more loving to her than having her closer and constantly reminding her of where she's not enough, which she hates. But I have an awareness that the very traits and the traumas that were created with her, I won't escape because they're inextricably woven with who I am as a human and a consciousness and lessons and purpose. So therefore, I guess in a way, I say no to her and I say yes to those traits in community or friends or clients or whatever it ends up being.
And even that, like that in itself can, like knowing that you can't escape it, you then get to do that work around, okay, well, if I know I can't escape it, then am I choosing to see it more closely in my mother, or am I still choosing the boundary that I know is healthful for my nervous system and keeping her at arm's length? That is also an absolutely okay choice. But knowing, like a choice, knowing the place, knowing that you're not going to escape the pain of the trait or the pain of the remembrance in your body.
You know what I love is that law of the one and the many, that we're always choosing the universal law of the one or the many. So I could choose all of those traits in the one and bring my mum close and she can be my teacher. Or I can say, actually, it's just a step too far for my nervous system in this lifetime. I would rather sit in love. So let's put her over there. But then I'm saying yes to the traits in the many because I've said no to the one. I'll say yes to the many.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me that then finds it easier to distill because I actually can see the wholeness of the humans who carry this particular trait that might be tricky for me. I can hold the wholeness of who they are. It makes it easier for me to love and therefore heal my mother wound by virtue of seeing them in a more complete light than when I'm around her and my inner child is like bulldozing into polarity.
It's just like too much. There's too much there to process, so it all just becomes start. Whereas traits in like little baby steps, kind of, then it's part of your own healing process.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So if it feels hard to go, you just got to love your mum, I get it. And I'm saying there's absolutely wisdom in that and you absolutely have freedom of choice. And in fact, over the course of your life in the ebbs and flows, it might be sometimes it's really you've got the space in your nervous system to love her and sometimes your own little family unit is pushing your nervous system far enough and you don't have the space to love her in that way and it changes form. And it doesn't mean you lose the teacher or you lose the lessons, but I do think you get to choose in what ways you want to be co-complicit in the teaching and the learning.
I love that. Thank you for bringing that nuance, because you can absolutely still integrate that wounding and create more capacity without having to have your mother in your life.
And it's not that she's not in my life. She is. But I've worked out a way to love her enough that she's in my life. She's just not in my face. In my life, not in my nervous system, maybe I should say.
So in your awareness, not your inner world, kind of.
Well, that's nice. In my awareness, not your inner world.
Or not your new sanctum.
So, Bridgie, how do we do this work with you if we find ourselves ribbing and rubbing up against this?
Yeah, so you can have a look and see if my Alchemy one-to-one program is right for you. It is 6 weeks of deep diving together to really, first of all, bring the joy and capacity back to your own mothering, and then dig a little deeper to what is it that's gripping you, keeping you stuck, keeping your wheels just revolving rather than evolving in your mothering and beyond. So you can find out more about that at bridgetwood.life. And you, Jules?
Would be Honey Club. If you are ready to get your irresistible game on, do the polarity, the masculine, the feminine, relearn how to see men, how to communicate in ways that meet your desires, and he feels great meeting you, then Honey Club is your place. So you can find out more about Honey Club at julietenner.love.
Remember to nourish the woman to rock the family.
And we'll see you next week when we continue to peel back the layers on your mothering journey.
Thank you so much for listening. We literally couldn't do this without you. Please share this podcast with anyone you think it would be medicine for.
If you desire to integrate your learnings practically and supportively into your life, then head on over to bridgetwood.life or julietenner.love to go deeper.
And if you feel like giving back a little to this free content, please rate us on iTunes or Facebook, all of which helps the podcast reach more mamas who need this type of tonic for the soul.